This is Fresh Air. It wouldn't be an exaggeration to say Cokie Roberts has politics in her blood. She covered Congress for NPR for 13 years and is now a political analyst for NPR and ABC TV. Her father, Hale Boggs, served in Congress for 32 years and became House Majority Leader. Her mother took over his seat after his 1972 death in a plane crash. I spoke with Cokie Roberts last spring before an audience at the WHYY Forum Theater in Philadelphia. I wanted to know if growing up in a political family influenced her attitude toward journalists. She told me there's a famous story in her family from 1952 when her father ran for governor of Louisiana and came in third in a bitter, nasty campaign. Cokie was 7 years old.
The counting had gone on all night long, and the phone rang the morning after the election. And my sister, who was 12, answered the phone. And the person on the other end asked to speak to my father, and she said, "He's asleep, and he's been up all night, and I will not awaken him." And the guy on the other end says, "Well, what does he think about the election?" And Barbara says, "Well, he knows he lost." And but then she, at 12, had the sense to say, "You know, who is this anyway?" And he said that he was a reporter for the afternoon paper. And she said, "Look, I'm only 12 years old. You can't use a word I said to you." And that afternoon's paper came out with the headline, "Source close to Hale Boggs concedes election." So.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And that is a, and that kind of thing happens much more often than any of us would like to believe, and it's a very useful thing. I gave a graduation speech at Columbia Journalism School a few years ago, and I started with "First, do no harm," and I think that it is a very useful thing to have been on the other side.
Do you think that you're more thoughtful of the privacy of politicians because of the situation you grew up in?
I do think I am more concerned about their privacy, but I also just see them much more as human beings, you know, as people with all the flaws and foibles and families of a human being, and that brings with it the respect that I have for human beings, but also the humor that I have about us all.
When I was growing up, my father was a millinery, and I had a sketchy idea of what he did, but I didn't really know for sure. When you were growing up, when you were growing up, your father was in Congress. How much of an idea did you have?
Oh, I knew
what
exactly
he really
what he was
did.
Doing. No, I knew. My father first ran for Congress before I was born, and Barbara was 15 months, and Tommy was born the week after he was elected. He was defeated 2 years later, went into the Navy, and then was reelected in 1946 when I was two, really, when he was reelected. And so all of my life, he was in politics, and we were incredibly involved. My mother and he had gone to college together. He had been editor of the college paper. She had been women's editor. And they had formed, with a group of other young people, a political reform group in Louisiana. Think of it. And it was to oust the successors of Huey Long. It was a very terrifying period. It was really a Hitlerian dictatorship, and they were engaged in a cause, and that was how they came into politics. My father first ran; he was 25. And I think about it now, you know, from my perspective of age, and I'm thinking of my mother going to Washington at age 24 with these two babies. Think of it. Before World War II, when Washington was still a very formal city with a great deal of protocol. I mean, I've always admired her greatly, but now when I realize what her life was like, I admire her even more. But they were very determined that we would be involved in their political lives, that we would have no family life otherwise. And so we went on every campaign trip. We gave speeches from the tiniest of ages. It's no accident that all three of us have ended up doing something in the talking realm for a living.
Well, stop and, right here. Stop right here. Do you remember any of the speeches that you had to give?
No, I don't. But I do remember. I'm sure they would vote for Hale Boggs.
Vote for my dad.
But make Louisiana better. Something. You know, keep the Mississippi River here. Whatever. But. That was very much part of our lives, and we went to Congress all the time. We would we went to school half year each place, so it was. I mean, our lives were the rhythm of the congressional season. And if there was an important bill up, we skipped school and went and watched the legislation. My mother felt, you know, arithmetic would always be there. We might not learn it, but it would always be there, and. You know, so I very much knew what he was doing.
Did you have to ever be the exemplary daughter
always,
on the campaign trail?
Always the exemplary daughter. I suppose it's only worse than being the minister's child. But as a Catholic, this wasn't an issue. I have. It's interesting because that's given me both sympathy for and yet a sort of a toughness about. Political families, because on the one hand, I do understand what they're going through. On the other hand, sort of my reaction is, well, so shape up and do it, you know.
What did you have to do to be exemplary?
It's what you couldn't do.
What couldn't you do? What couldn't you do that everybody else was doing?
You couldn't go to bars as you got older. You couldn't be in a position where you were cutting up and people would find out. I mean, you had to be much better behaved in public than our friends would be. And we're talking, keep in mind, New Orleans, Louisiana, you know. This is not a city that is known for its Puritan ethic, unlike your own. And we were always aware that people knew who we were and that we did have to behave. And then, as we got older, there were all of the civil rights battles going on, and we were on one side, and the rest of the city was on the other, the rest of the white city, and that became very difficult. It became something where people would say hurtful things, and you would want to fight back, and you would fight back to some degree, but you had to be careful exactly how far you fought.
But you were usually on the same side of political issues that your parents were?
Until the Vietnam War.
And then what happened?
Well, we did the same thing every other young family, you know. all of the youth of America was on one side and all of the older people on another for a long time, and then it changed.
Because your father had the power to vote and was also very influential, probably to even the president.
Sure, of course. He was a leader in the House of Representatives.
So did you try to change his mind?
Sure.
Did you think there's no way you were going to ever do that? So why?
Oh, no. We always argued. But we always did from day one. I mean, it was a household where that was valued. It was not discouraged.
My guest is Cokie Roberts, political analyst for NPR and ABC TV.
Your father disappeared in a plane crash on a campaign tour through Alaska in 1972. I know he was never found. Was the plane ever found?
No. It's really remarkable. It was at the end of a congressional session, and the people who were there, I learned different things about it all the time still from people. He was exhausted. At the end of a congressional session, you always are. You haven't been to bed for days, and he was majority leader, so he'd been, running the House. And a young congressman from Alaska, a freshman, had begged him to come and campaign for him, and he desperately didn't want to go, I'm told, at the end. That's, you know, it's such a long trip, and then the campaigning is difficult, and it always involves moving around in little planes, which he never liked. But off he went, because he had promised to do it, and there he did. The plane never left from Anchorage, never arrived in Juneau. And the most extensive search in American history was launched, and not only by the good folk of Alaska, who were quite remarkable, but then, of course, the military was all called in, and then the spy planes all came in. We're very good spies, by the way. It makes me feel better about your tax dollars. The planes from 80,000 feet took incredibly detailed pictures, which literally rewrote the map of Alaska, found inlets that they had never seen before, all kinds of things. And when they would sense, there were also, you could take some infrared pictures, that kind of thing, and when they would sense something that they couldn't tell what it was, and send a helicopter down to see what the heat object was, it would often just be a log. Or they did find some World War II wrecks, that kind of thing. So I've got to believe the plane went to the bottom of the sea. I mean, that's the most likely explanation. It's also the most comforting.
Was there a moment where you and the rest of your family decided from here on in we will just assume that he has passed?
No. No. First of all, I think my mother felt that that would be letting down the search and the searchers and him. Secondly, the necessities of politics, he had to be elected. He disappeared on October 16th, and Election Day wasn't until November. So he was elected. And then as we children, grown children, became more and more desirous of some sort of ceremony to end it. My mother, first of all, was very reluctant to ever give up. But secondly, again, the congressional necessities became the operative thing. So Congress convened in January, and his seat was declared vacant. And at that point, we then had a big memorial service in New Orleans. So,
one more question. I think, you know, from the outside looking in at your life, you seem to be somebody who has everything in a way, you know, a wonderful family, a fantastic career. Everybody admires your work and so on. I think most people end up feeling that they've sacrificed so much to have what they have and that they have enough of one thing but not enough of something else. What do you feel that you've sacrificed? Do you feel that there's like an important ingredient that's been missing in your life? Or do you feel like you've really had a balance that you're comfortable with?
I've had a much better balance than most women are able to achieve. And my message to young women always is that I think that the important thing to remember is you've got a long life ahead of you for most people. I mean, they'll be in the workforce for 50 years, and you don't have to do everything at once. I said no to lots of good jobs along the way because they were inappropriate for my family at that time. Mm-hmm. I feel strongly that you can say no to something, and that's not the last time someone will ever offer you that. The one thing you do run out of time on is the ability to have a family. Your children, and then once you have children, they're only going to be young for a certain number of years. Your parents are only going to be old for a certain number of years. You're only going to have sicknesses that you need to deal with and take care of for certain periods of time. Those are the things where you have to say, this is the priority now, because it's not going to be here ever again. And work will always be there, all too much. So I think that the choices that I have made have almost entirely been family first. That's not to say that on any given day, of course, or week or month, that I haven't worked around the clock and barely seen everybody. But in big life choices, they have been family first, and I that's one of those situations where you just don't regret it. I suppose if I had to say what's missing is that I still feel that I don't have enough time to spend with friends or with people who I think need some special care at this special moment for whatever reason. But I sure try.
Cookie Roberts is a political analyst for NPR and ABC TV. Our interview was recorded at the WHYY Forum Theater in Philadelphia. This is Fresh Air.